welcome to the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sotvedt.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvedt.
Which makes this Scaredy Cats, the horror movie tropes edition.
Aren't they all horror movie tropes edition? Because they're all horror movies?
This movie specifically is like a dismantling of the tropes and stuff.
Oh, I see.
It did it first, you'll see. Because today we're watching Scream, which is a slasher classic from 1996. So, Vicky, how is your journey with horror movies going so far? Have you watched like enough of them to pick up on any good reoccurring themes or maybe rules?
Everybody in horror movies is real dumb all the time. And if they thought for like 5 seconds, they would not die. Like 9 times out of 10. I understand enough about horror movies to get the memes. And I send you those memes because I now think they're kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. That's about it. Don't go alone.
Well, that's kind of included in the, like, if everybody just thought for 4 seconds. Like, if there was ever a serial killer loose in my neighborhood who had murdered, like, 8 people in 2 days, I would not be like, I'll just casually stroll to the 7-Eleven at 1 in the morning by myself in a bikini top with my headphones in, you know?
That'd be wild.
That's what I mean. You gotta actually think for 4 seconds and go, maybe I shouldn't go out if there's a serial killer in my neighborhood with headphones in. Just a thought.
So besides what I've mentioned so far, what do you know about Scream?
He's got that mask.
The ghost face mask?
Sure. I know it as the Scream mask, honestly.
Yeah.
He's got the mask. There may or may not have been someone who did actually murder some people wearing that mask in like a weird copycat thing. I don't know. I'll look that up and see if that's real or an urban legend.
Come back to us in part two to find out if that is true or not.
I know there's... It's like self-aware, I guess would be the term. Like it's making fun of people being dumb. And that's really it. That's what I got.
All right. Well, Scream was directed by Wes Craven, who of course is no stranger to the genre. We have seen the remake of Last House on the Left. Of course, the original was directed by him. We've also seen A Nightmare on Elm Street. He's pretty much had his hands in most of that entire series. Screenplay by Kevin Williamson, who also wrote Scream 2 and 4. I guess not 3.
Apparently they're making a 5.
Yeah. And he also wrote I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is another slasher for the shelf of slasher movies.
It's a whole separate genre of horror, is the slasher shelf.
Well, it is. The slasher is a genre, true. It's just they're all so samey.
Well, there's only so many ways you can stab people to death, you
know? Yeah. It stars Nev Campbell as Sydney, Skeet Ulrich as Billy.
Skeet. Okay.
Is the lad's name. He's not a lad anymore. He was a lad when he made this, but...
Just checking.
He's a bona fide adult now. Matthew Lilliard is Stuart, who of course is Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Love it.
Who is honestly just an incredible actor right there. He embodied that character, and he's awesome in this too. Had a budget of 14 to 15 million bucks. Box office return of 173 million bucks.
That's a pretty good investment.
Not bad. So a couple fast facts about this movie before we hop into part 2 and break it down for you. The titular ghost face mask worn by the killer was actually just a run-of-the-mill Halloween mask that Wes Craven found in a house while they were location scouting.
Like found it? Just like on the floor?
I assume like, who knows, and stuff. But it was like a Halloween mask that was produced en masse, like a spooky ghost mask that you'd find at any like Halloween store.
There's some sort of other horror movie plot here in like scouting for your horror movie and then you find the horror movie mask like in the house.
Not quite, but there's the was it the Haunted Mask Goosebumps book? It's about a haunted
Halloween
mask. No, I never
Halloween read Goosebumps. I was not into spooky things as a child. I still am not into spooky things.
I think my Haunted Mask, I think that's what it's called. She gets, like, a mask stuck on her face, and she becomes a monster.
Isn't that just the Jim Carrey movie?
No. No. This is super different.
Anyways.
That's the first Goosebumps book I ever read. Anyway, the original title of Scream was going to be Scary Movie. Of course, that name was changed and later used by the horror comedy spoof series that started in 2000 that begins with making fun of Scream. So, it all comes... All comes
circle.
Around. For the opening scene with Drew Barrymore's character Casey, Wes Craven kept the actress upset and crying by telling her sad animal abuse stories.
Oh!
And just kept her, like, miserable and crying for her entire shoot.
That's unfortunate. I'm sorry.
Method acting. approximately 50 gallons of prop blood were used to make this movie.
That's a lot.
Ton of prop blood.
That's a lot of prop blood.
A lot of prop blood. So that's all I've really got for this movie. There's a lot more, but I didn't really want to get into it, lest we be here forever and ever. So that is it for part one. Vicky, did you have anything else?
I do not.
Okay, perfect. Come join us in part two, where we break down the movie for your ears. Y'all. Hello, and we're back with part two of Scream. So this is the part of the episode where we are going to break down the plot synopsis for you. So if you don't want to spoil, go fucking watch it.
Yes, on Shudder is pretty much the only place we found legally to stream or watch it.
Yeah, a bizarrely hard movie for us to obtain.
Yeah, especially considering how popular it is. And before we get into it, we promised in part two we would let you know if I was correct about the whole murder being inspired by it. And I was. That is a real thing that happened. And the guys did apparently film it to try and make it like found footage. And kudos to the police. They were like, how about we just never let those tapes ever exist outside of the evidence
locker? And also, how about we tell no one your guys' names?
That's true.
Don't get to be famous at all.
Yeah, so it's just some guys who are now serving life without parole.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's those guys.
Good.
It is good.
That's a good way to handle it. Like, there's always the part of me that wants to know that kind of stuff because I'm fascinated by the macabre, but I also don't want them to get the fame.
I'm telling you, we gotta just call him, like, serial killer number 25, serial killer number 26.
Just give them numbers.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Yeah. Anyways, back to Scream.
Back to Scream. The movie. So, our movie opens up with a ba-dum title card that says Scream on it, because that's the name of the movie.
While people scream in the background.
Ah!
We then cut to a corded phone, remember those?
1996.
And it's ringing, and a girl picks up, we will find out later her name is Casey.
Drew Barrymore.
And there's a conversation between an unknown man and Casey, and eventually she's like, okay, well I'm gonna go now. And he calls back, like, three times, and she keeps picking it up.
Yeah, at first he calls, and she's like, you must have a wrong number. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she's like, no problem, happens all the time, hangs up. Then he calls back, and he's like, I want to talk to you. And instead of being like, this is too weird, I'm not going to start talking to you, she starts, like, chatting him up.
Yes. At about the fourth time, she has, like, a proper conversation, and he's like, what's your favorite movie? And she's like, oh, Halloween. I've watched it, like, 20 times. And just, like, waltzes away from her popcorn that she's making on the stove. Yeah, and it's like, what are you doing?
And she's like, what's your favorite horror movie? And he's like, oh, I don't know. And she's like, I bet it's Nightmare on Elm Street, the one with the guy with the finger knives. The first one was good, but the sequels were bad. And I was like, haha, Wes Craven calling out his own work.
After the fourth time or so, she hangs up. When she answers it, it tells her that it's going to kill her if she hangs up again. It's no longer a fun conversation.
No, it's not fun anymore.
The voice on the phone then starts to tell her how terrible she is at being in a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Hasn't she seen a horror movie?
Yeah.
She's doing a terrible job.
Yeah, like, she's just kind of wandering around. Nothing is locked. But then he tells her, like, come to the back porch and, like, look outside. She comes to the back porch, and at this point she's kind of getting more and more upset. She says that her boyfriend Steve is on his way, and he's part of the football team, and he's going to kick his ass. And he's like, well, come to the back porch. Come see. And so she goes to the back, and who does he have in the yard tied to a lawn chair? Steve.
It's actually quite a cool scene, because she just says her boyfriend is on the way. And the guy's like, I thought you said you didn't have a boyfriend. And she's like, yeah, but I do. And he's like, is his name Steve?
Yeah.
And that's really when the panic sets in.
Oh, no.
The phone instructions, though, tell her to turn off the porch light and answer a question. And if she answers wrong, the voice is going to kill Steve.
Yeah, Steve's going to die. So the voice begins to ask Casey these questions. And the first one is, what is the name of the killer in Halloween? She, of course, answers Michael Myers. So that is correct. And then he's like, great, you answered my question. But now I'm going to ask you another one. And she's
that's the warm-up question.
Yeah, and she's like, you're changing the rules on me, man.
So then he goes, now, what's the killer in Friday the 13th? And of course, in her eagerness to answer, she says, Jason Voorhees. And I, dear listeners, knew that was wrong.
Because you've seen it.
I have. It's really Pamela Voorhees.
Yes.
Not Jason.
Jason is not the killer until the sequels.
Yes. And so it says, oh, so sorry, gotta kill Steve now.
Yeah.
And she turns the porch light back on, and indeed, murdered Steve.
Indeed, Steve has been disemboweled.
Yes, and he's now lying there with his guts all out. I was genuinely confused. I missed that he had been stabbed. I was like, did they explode him from the inside? What kind of weird-ass saw is this?
He looks the exact same. At this point, though, Casey is done kind of playing this guy's rules. And so she's running around the house, she's locking the door, and eventually she sneaks outside.
Yes,
because she thinks the killer is in the house with her.
Before that happens, though, a chair explodes through the patio,
right.
And she grabs a knife and then runs outside. Because, yeah, the killer is definitively in the house now. It's not like a sneaking suspicion.
No.
So she tries to sneak away, and we see the car with her parents is just coming home. But unfortunately, she does not get far, and the killer busts through the front window. And we see the titular scream mask and chases Casey down and stabs her.
Yeah. He stabs her, and she starts to, like, crawl towards... We see the car pull up in the driveway, and it's her parents, and they're coming into the house. They're looking for her daughter. And because she, I guess, was choked before then...
No, he stabs her in the throat as well.
Right. So she's calling out to them, but she can't because her voice is so hoarse because she'd been stabbed in her throat.
Yes, and as their parents get inside, they realize something is very wrong.
There's a mist. There's popcorn on the stove.
On fire. Yeah, the whole house is filled with smoke. Also, they open they get to the living room, and there's a fucking chair smashed through the window, and a dead Steve on the patio.
Mm-hmm.
And so they pick up the phone to call 911, and they hear kind of the last breaths of Casey.
Casey, who's being dragged across the lawn now, and we see she's got the phone still in her hand, and it's picking up her last gasps, and they move outside.
Yes.
Or rather, the father is like, you need to go down the street and call the cops. To his wife, and so Casey's mom leaves, gets on the front porch, and sees her daughter hanging from a tree, also disemboweled.
Yep, it's not great.
Wah wah.
We then go to our main character, Sydney, and she's at home in her bedroom.
Typing away at her computer.
And her boyfriend, Billy, sneaks in. She screams, because he's just appeared in her window. He's like, it's fine. And then her dad is like, hey, I heard screaming. Are you okay?
Yeah, so she goes and heads her dad off at the door and is like, don't worry about it, Dad. Like, I wasn't screaming, no problem. And he scrutinizes the room, but then we learn that he is going to be out of town all weekend.
On a business trip. And they can reach him at this hotel that he always stays in this business trip. It's very routine.
Mm-hmm.
Da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to leave this movie now till the end. Bye.
Billy, at this point, pops up from under the bed or wherever he was hiding, and is like, you know, I was watching The Exorcist on TV, and then I realized it had been edited to be, like, for TV, so it left out the best bits. And then I was thinking about our relationship, because we used to be R-rated, but now we're only PG-13 for television. So we should have sex now, because that's my best pickup line.
Certainly an elaborate pickup line.
It's a weird line after breaking into your girlfriend's house.
Absolutely. Billy's a bit of a weirdo. Sydney, though, is still not comfortable with all that, especially now that he posits it in that way.
Yes, so there's some smooching, mm-hmm. And then as he tries to put his hand under her nightgown, she kind of pushes him away.
She's like, that's enough, we're done, be gone.
Yes, the following morning, there are police all over school campus, as well as so many journalists, and Sydney's best friend Tatum appears and tells Sydney that Casey and her boyfriend Steve were murdered. It was horrible. Let me tell you all of the graphic details.
Available that morning to everybody widely.
And then they're like, oh, and they haven't arrested anybody yet. And I'm like, yeah, because it was like fucking 8 hours ago.
Yeah.
Like, of course they don't arrest Unless you are literally at the scene when the police arrive, they don't arrest anybody in the first 12 hours.
But it's very, very sad because Sydney sat next to Casey in her English class. And then we see Sydney later in her English class looking over at the empty desk and feeling sad. But then she's told that it's her turn to go and be interviewed by the police. And the policeman that interviews her is none other than Deputy Dewey.
Tatum's older brother.
Yeah.
Who's...
A doof.
A small town cop.
He's a doof.
He's a small town cop. After class, everyone is debating whether the killer is a man or a woman. And Tatum is like, it's actually really sexist for you to suggest that this serial killer couldn't be a lady, because this is the hill of feminism I'm choosing to die on. And this is one of our references in the movie. They reference 21 different horror movies in Scream.
Yeah, apparently Vicky counted.
I did count.
Those rats.
So, that's one of them. At this point, we meet Randy and Stu, who are kind of the other two of the core five.
Yeah, and Stu, played by Shaggy himself.
Matthew Lillard.
And Randy.
Yes. So, Stu is Tatum's boyfriend, and Randy is, like, kind of the goofball of the group who works at the movie store. Remember movie stores?
Yeah, man. I bought my first... video game and movie at my local Blockbuster.
You bought them or you rented them?
I bought them.
Oh.
And I also, but I definitely rented VHSs from Blockbuster.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
My most titular Blockbuster experience was, it's relevant actually to horror movies, was I was in junior high invited to hang out with some friends and they were going to watch Dawn of the Dead, and I watched the first 5 minutes and was like, nah fam. And I went to the bathroom and I like texted my dad and I was like, you have to call me, that you have to come get me for some emergency. And then I like went back to the living room and my phone rang and I was like, hello? And it was like, you have to come home, there's an emergency. I was like, oh no! And then he picked me up and we went to Blockbuster and I rented Sahara, I think, instead. And we watched Sahara instead of Dawn of the Dead.
Heresy. That's okay. Nowadays, you could definitely handle Dawn of the Dead, methinks.
I don't know if we're quite Dawn of the Dead
yet. You watched Train to Busan.
Zombies still stress me out.
Right, but you watched Train to Busan. You survived it. So I'm saying that you could do Dawn of the Dead.
Maybe.
Anyways.
At home, Sydney calls Tatum and is like, hey, can I sleep over at your house? Because my dad is out of town and the police and the reporters bring back deja vu. Deja vu about what? Well, as we find out when she's flipping through the TV channels, which are all about the murders.
On the old boob tube.
Her mother was murdered brutally. A year ago.
Yes, she was raped and murdered, and it was bad. And only a year ago, so pretty fresh.
Yes, Sydney falls asleep on the couch.
Yep, but is awoken later, as the sun has clearly gone down, by a call from Tatum, who's going to the video store right now to rent a movie with Tom Cruise in it. And apparently you can see his dick.
I don't know. I looked up that movie. Apparently, it's like a 90s movie of Tom Cruise. He's like a young high school football star in a dead-end town. But he's got to be better at football to get like a scholarship. I don't know. It didn't seem like a movie I ever want to watch. Mostly because it's got Tom Cruise and also because it's about football.
But Tatum wants to watch it. So she's going to go rent it.
Yes.
And for their sleepover.
And then she hangs up and the phone rings again. And Sydney is like, listen, Tatum, I don't care. But it's not Tatum. It's the murderer.
Yes. And he asks her about scary movies, and just the same, it's kind of the same routine he was doing with Casey. But Sydney is a lot less willing to just start talking to him.
Yeah, she lists a bunch of dumb things girls in movies do, and she is clearly under the impression for quite a while it's Randy, not actually a killer. And she goes so far as to go out on the porch and be like, see, look, there's nobody here, blah, 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 blah.
And then the killer's like, only one problem. I'm not Randy. And also, I know that your mom got killed, and I'm going to tell you about that. And this causes Sydney to be like, oh shit, something ain't right. So she heads back inside from the outside and locks the door.
Yes, but too late, the killer is inside the house.
No!
That is a trope, isn't it? The killer is already inside.
Already inside the house.
And there's a tussle, and she manages to get up to her room where she gets the door
barricaded.
Yeah, with like her closet door. And she manages to call 911 on her computer.
Yes.
1996, text to type.
Yeah, because she tried the phone and the phone lines were cut. So she's like, 911. And it, like, boop, 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 boop. He calls the police.
Yes.
So cool.
The killer disappears from the door. And moments later, Billy appears at the window and is like, I heard screaming. And then his cell phone falls out of his pocket. And it's 1996, so not everyone has a cell phone.
Exactly. And so Sydney immediately is clearly suspicious of Billy, because why has he got a cell phone? And then we see the next scene is the cops, and they are arresting Billy.
Yes. Well, she actually ran away from Billy, like, straight up ran to the door. And we see Dewey holding the scream mask outside.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And so Billy is arrested, and Tatum arrives and escorts Sydney to her car. And this is also where we learn that Dewey is Tatum's older brother.
Yeah, they're siblings.
Yes. And then the main journalist, Gail, shows up with the world's fastest journalist tips, honestly. It's like 15 seconds after they've put Billy in the car, and she's like, come on, Kenny, they found a costume here. We better interview them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Gail Weathers, wherever she gets her tips from. Clearly a good source.
The psychic network, honestly, is the only way she could have had that so quickly.
The Long Island medium told her. she, though, sees Tatum and recognizes Tatum as Sydney's friend and goes up and tries to talk to her. But Tatum is like, I'm not talking to you. So clearly she's, like, in on some kind of sordid history.
Yes, which we will learn 3 or 4 scenes.
Yeah, so
now
Tatum refuses to speak to her, and Sydney is taken away, while Billy's calling out to her, being like, I'm not the killer, Sid, you gotta tell him.
Yes, so at the station, Dewey is trying to get in contact with Sydney's dad, who is not answering, and he's never registered at the hotel he said he was going to.
Yes.
Which is suspicious.
Sus.
Sus. I guess that's what all the kids say now, isn't it?
It is. Sus. Yeah, yeah.
I think they just say sus because they don't know how to say suspicious. They don't know how to type it. Honestly, I think nobody knows how to spell it, so they just started saying sus.
Too complex a word.
Yes.
So Billy is being questioned by the sheriff, and he is insisting, of course, that he is innocent. Gail Weathers outside tries to just, like, walk into the police station past all the other reporters, past all the cops, and then is incensed when one cop is like, stop. She's like, oh.
Don't you know who I am?
And
it's like a journalist who's kind of a dick,
who
honestly
can't just walk past the police line.
No. So Tatum starts harassing her brother to let her take Sydney home in the most sibling way possible. There's a lot of, like, you know, mom told me, and da da da, and like some of the little arm flapping kind of fights at each other. And so they take Sydney out the back way, but unfortunately Gail and cameraman Kenny are like, hey, I bet there's a back way, and accost them.
Yeah. And so Gail Weathers does catch both Sydney and Tatum in the alleyway, and they start talking about her mom's case and how Gail is writing a book on it, and she's like, I'll be sure, and Sydney's like, I'll be sure to buy a copy. And
no, Gail says she'll send her a copy.
Send her a copy, right, and then Sydney turns around and decks her.
In the face. It's great.
Right in the fucking face.
So they arrive at Tatum's house, they're sitting on the beds, because they have two single beds.
Yes.
And then Tatum's mom shows up and is like, hey, there's a phone call for you. And the phone call is the killer.
Right. And this is after, but before then, Tatum's like, you're such a badass for punching that reporter. Look at you.
Yes. Defending yourself.
Yeah. But Sydney can't defend herself against sounds. And so she puts the phone up to her head and the killer's voice accosts her. Are you quite okay?
Can't defend herself against sounds. The following morning, Dewey informs Sydney that Billy's phone record came back and he did not make a call to her house last night, so he's been released. And then he drives Sydney and Tatum to school, where Sydney is again accosted immediately by so many reporters.
Yes, and I think at the house, we see on the TV that the only reason why the killer, Sydney's mom's killer, was put away is because Sydney testified against him.
Yes, he has an appeal coming up. He was put on death row.
Yeah.
Sydney goes to talk to Gail, and we learn the tension is that Gail's book is suggesting that her mom's killer is not actually her mom's killer and was framed for it. And we learn this is mostly because Sydney says she saw him leaving because it was his coat, which was covered in blood. Mm-hmm. And Gail is like, you saw someone leaving wearing that coat, but you don't know who.
You don't know who it was. It was just a person wearing that coat. And so she clearly believes Cotton Weary's innocent, and we can see seeds of doubt maybe beginning to plant themselves in Sydney's brain. She's like, oh, maybe, I don't know.
Yes. And then in the school hallways, having moved on from confusing questions of morality and journalists, Sydney is heading to class where she runs into Billy, who's been released.
She's running into Billy, but before she runs into Billy, a student runs down the hallway in a ghost face mask screaming, and Stuart's like, ha ha, like, this is funny, it's like Christmas in here, and we're all like,
Guys, people are dying.
Well, Stuart, specifically. Because even everyone else is like, Stuart, what is wrong with you?
Right, right, right. But the ghost face mask prank kids.
That's true.
What the fuck's wrong with people?
Yes. So Sydney runs into Billy, and she's like, okay, I don't think it's you anymore, because, you know, your phone call. And I want to say, about here is when I told Tom that I think it's for sure Billy. I just want to point out that I had that locked in relatively early.
Right there. And so Billy's like, I appreciate those words. And in response, my words to you are, you need to get over your mother's death.
Her brutal murder.
You need to,
a year ago.
You need to get over it. When my mom left, I had to get over it. And you just need to deal with your shit, Sydney. And Sydney's like, it's been a year.
And also, your mom leaving town is not the same as my mother being murdered. Yeah. That's different.
Do not compare them. And so Sydney runs away from Billy because he's an asshole.
Yes.
Fuck him.
We then see the principal expel the two students who are running through the hall in the scream costume.
Principal Himbry.
Yes. Yes.
He is not pleased with these teenagers' antics.
Yes, he also is like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
The corruption of youth.
Yes, he says some choice words about the generation coming up in the 90s.
Yeah.
Sydney, meanwhile, heads to the bathroom, where she overhears two girls talking about how they think she made it up. Friggin'. They think she's a slut just like her mother, and maybe she even actually is the murderer who killed Casey and Steve.
Yeah, apparently Regina George goes to this high school.
Regina George on, like, hate crack.
On, like, hate crack? Haterade. Drinking the Haterade.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Much better than hate crack.
Much better. Hate crack is still pretty good, though. But, so Sydney's like, I don't want to deal with this. So she hides in a stall and overhears them saying, like, oh, yeah, and I bet that her mom was a hoe that just went all around town.
Well, I think it's well established, the rumors of her mom's
promiscuity.
And they're saying Sydney is probably just, like, her mom.
Yes.
So after they leave, Sydney is trying to get her life together. She's having a traumatic experience.
She's trying to wash her hands and also wash away all the feelings.
And then a foot steps down from a toilet and a black cloaky thing drifts down over the feet.
It's kind of funny because throughout the entire movie, it does kind of look like just a bad Halloween costume.
It is.
I'm into it though, like, because that's what it's supposed to be, right? A bad Halloween costume. So.
Yes.
Yeah, but anyway, as she moves past, because she's clearly suspicious that somebody's in here now, and she starts to move towards the door, and Ghostface jumps out at her from the stall, but she manages to dodge him.
It's a smooth ass slide, honestly, under the arm through the door.
Yeah, she's like,
woof. It's on point. Here.
But she runs away, and I guess we just don't talk about that. Because we move on immediately after she runs away.
Yes, we move on to Dewey, who has appeared presumably to take Sydney and Tatum home, and Gail tries to accost him in the most aggressive... She's flirting, and it's not clear if she's flirting, or if she's flirting to get information, or some weird combination of flirting to get information and also flirting. But it's like, aggressively flirty.
It's 50% for the scoop, and 50% because Dewey's got that mustache.
It's not a good mustache.
It's not a good mustache.
She's very aggressive about it, but Dewey finally manages to shake her off.
Although
clearly interested, though.
Yeah, he clearly wants to not shake her off, but his duty comes first. And as he goes to collect Sydney and his sister, we get an announcement over the PA system from the principal that classes are suspended because kids are dying and things, there's an investigation going on. There's also a curfew. And all the students that are on the front lawn celebrate because, woo, no class.
Yes, and Stu appears to invite Tatum and Sydney to a party at his house since there's no classes. And there's a curfew at 9 o'clock, so may as well party, I guess.
May as well party. Like, come on over, have some brewskis, watch a John Carpenter classic.
Yes. In his office, we cut to Principal Himbry.
And he is wearing a scream mask and, like, making fate, like, going boo at himself in the mirror, and it's like, moral corruption indeed, sir.
Yes, and then there's a knock on a door, and he whips the mask off and checks the hallway.
Nobody's there, though.
So, there's a knock again, though, and he goes to check, and he, like, bursts into a different hallway, and we see the janitor, who's named Fred, and he's wearing Kruger's striped sweater.
Yeah, and he's like, what's going on out there? And the janitor's like, what do you want? And he's like, oh, sorry, Fred. And we're like, ha ha, ha yes. Ha ha.
And apparently, Fred is played by Wes Craven, who directed both films.
I'm pretty sure he is, anyway.
I don't know, I believed you when you said it, so.
All right, I appreciate you have that faith in me. The principal, however, upon going back into the office, is like, okay, I guess everything's fine, but everything is not fine, as he is attacked immediately by Ghostface and stabbed.
Yes, because he closes the door, and hiding behind the door is the killer.
And Fred can't hear his screams over the waxing of the floors.
He's also got headphones on.
And the sweet, sweet R&B beats.
I like how that's just what you assume Fred the Janitor is listening to.
Why not?
Meanwhile, we go to Tatum and Sydney, who are discussing, I think at Tatum's house, about whether Sydney's mom was really having an affair with Cotton, the guy who is in jail for her murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear Sydney is starting to consider, like, maybe her mom was not great.
Maybe there's some truth to some of those rumors, and maybe she should have thought more before testifying against the guy. But we go away from that, and we go to Randy's job at the video store.
Just before we do, though, we see the killer running away from the bushes as Tatum and Sydney head inside.
Oh, yeah.
So we start seeing him a lot in, like, the background of
sneaking
shots
around,
Sydney.
Yeah, totally.
Yes. But now at the video store.
Now at the video store in Randy's job, and that video store is bumping.
It's popping like it's 1996.
Everybody from town is in this video store.
Stu is like, Randy, are you coming to my party? And Randy is like, listen, the killer is Billy. And I'm like, yes, Randy is my man. And Randy is like, the cops don't watch horror movies. I watch horror movies. It's clearly Billy. And I, on my couch, I'm like, yes, Randy, I also watch horror movies. It is clearly Billy.
Randy. I think Randy is supposed to be the conduit for the viewer.
Randy is the viewer's feelings.
He is the viewer in a character in a horror movie, yeah.
Yes, and we get a fairly good meta conversation about the simple formula in which Randy kind of loses it a little bit and yells a lot, and everyone is like, well, okay there, Randy.
Yeah, but he's convinced that this is all this is a horror movie they're in. Clearly it's a horror movie they're in, and he thinks that there's certain rules for surviving it, but he doesn't get into those just yet.
No, but he does have a great line, which is, it's the millennium. Motives are incidental.
Yeah, that's good shit.
It is a good line, honestly.
That is pretty good shit. But then Billy and Stu begin to kind of harass Randy, and they're like, well, maybe you're the killer. And Randy's like, you know what? I would be the first person to admit that, yes, I should be, like, the prime suspect.
But then he has some reason why he's not.
Yeah.
I forget why. Oh, because he has records of working in the store, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways, we get a montage of all the businesses closing early for curfew.
Red Right Hand plays.
Yes, for the second time?
This is the first time, I think.
Okay. It plays twice in the movie. Dewey gives Tatum and Sydney a ride to the store, and they're discussing how Sydney is starting to feel like maybe she should get over her mother's brutal murder and start having sex with Billy again.
Just get over it.
Just
because that's how it works.
Yeah, she's been really selfish lately.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a
bad message.
Yes.
Bad message.
And as it pans, we see the reflection of the killer in the, like, door of the frozen waffle section.
the waffles.
Meanwhile, Dewey is talking to an officer, the sheriff.
I think it's the sheriff, and they're talking about how the prime suspect is Sydney's father.
Yes, because the call records have come back now, and the calls to her house were made from his phone. Yeah. And they still can't get a hold of him. Nobody has heard from him in a few days now.
Yes, he's off the grid.
Yes, so Dewey receives instructions to stay close to Sydney and not let her out of his sight. And he's like, great, guess I'm going to this party.
Going to that pumpin' party.
And the party is pumpin'. It's boppin'.
Oh, yeah. And lockin'. And poppin' and lockin'.
Ooh. Was pop and lock a thing in 1996 yet?
No. What was the thing? The moonwalk would have been a thing. The worm, maybe? YMCA? Macarena?
YMCA would definitely have been a thing, because that was the 80s.
Sweet breakdancing?
Breakdancing is a thing.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Sick breakdancing, eating go-gurts. Tubular!
No go-gurts, but there is a lot of beer. And outside, Dewey, Gail, and cameraman Kenny all run into each other, and Gail is like, I'ma just sneak into this party and hide a camera here.
Yeah. And so it's not a very, like, spy technology has come a long
way. It's a full-on camcorder.
It's just it's a camera that she just, like, puts on a shelf and it's like, no one will see it.
And no one does.
Nobody, well, they're all drunk, dumb teens, so I guess that's actually fair.
But they're not drunk when she gets there. Some of them probably are, but some of them have, like, just, anyways.
Yeah. And we see Randy is running some horror movie trivia in the living room, which is where we get a few more references.
Yes, they're watching Halloween, I think.
Yeah, they're watching Halloween.
Tatum is heading into the garage to get a few more beers, because, you know, party's in full swing. Gotta get your beers.
Woo-hoo.
And the door closes behind her, and we're like, oh no! And then some stuff falls over, and we're like, oh no!
But then it's just a kitty cat.
Or is it?
No, it's not just a kitty cat, because cats can't work locks or the light. And so she goes to check on the door, and it's locked, and the lights go out.
Yes, and she opens the garage door to go out that way, but as she gets there, the garage door closes, and she turns around, and who should be there? But the killer.
Ghostface!
And she thinks it's a joke. Which, like, fair. People have been running through the high school wearing these masks.
Yeah. She thinks it's Randy, and so she comes up to him and she's like, oh, you want to play Psycho Killer? And Ghostface nods. She's like, can I play the part of the helpless victim? And Ghostface nods. And then she's like, oh, please don't kill me. I want to make it to the sequel. Okay, stop fucking around. I need to get through there. But then he slashes her in the arm.
And she's like, oh shit. Not a game.
I've been bamboozled.
And she struggles against him like a champ, but when trying to escape, she decides to go out through the cat door in the garage.
Yeah, that was really her only error there, but she does, like, hit him in the head with a fridge door that she, like, opens up on him, and then she's throwing beer bottles at him that are smashing up against him. Ghostface actually gets beaten up in this movie a lot.
Yes.
He's just a person.
She gets stuck in the cat door, though, and Ghostface whips that garage door button.
And she gets pulled on up and has her neck snapped.
It is by far the worst death in the movie.
Yeah.
The only time I looked away was, like, frankly, 1 second before that. I was like, nope, I can't. I can't do it.
I don't want to deal with that.
I didn't want... The crunch, the noise was bad enough, knowing what... Like, I... No, I didn't. Yeah. It was the worst death in the movie, easily.
Agreed. So that's Rip Tatum. And then we go back to the party, and Billy's here.
Yes, and he wants to talk to Sydney, and Stu is like, don't you use my parents' bedroom to talk? And Billy is like, have you ever heard the word subtlety in your life?
but Sydney's like, no, I do want to talk with you. And so they go upstairs, and Sydney tells him that she's decided to stop being so selfish with her PTSD.
Yeah, she was too self-absorbed.
Yeah, she was being totally self-absorbed and with her obsessed with her PhD, or PTSD.
Her PhD would be very different, although her PhD might cause her PTSD.
Yeah, but she's so sorry, and now she's ready to sleep with him, and I...
Because she's gotten over it, and we're just sitting there like, it's not selfish to have PTSD, ma'am.
No.
It's not. What?
No.
And Billy is like, hot diggity dog, she's let's like, get it on.
Over my PTSD, DTF. Let's rock.
Downstairs, all the kiddos are watching a horror movie. And Randy stands up to tell them the rules of the horror movie, mm-hmm. which are you can't have sex, you can't drink, you can't do drugs.
Never say, I'll be right back, yes. And then leave the room. Which are all fair.
Yes.
Fair rules.
Meanwhile, Gail and Kenny are watching in their van the video recording, which is on a 30-second delay.
Yes.
This will be important later.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dewey knocks on the van, and they're like, oh shit, and turns everything off, and then opens it, and Dewey's like, hey, so there's an abandoned car down in the bushes. Do you, like, maybe want to come for a walk? Uh-huh. And, like, maybe want to look at this abandoned car with me, maybe?
It's not just like, he's like, there's a dead bird in the woods, want to go poke it? No. He's told to investigate the car by the sheriff.
He sure is, but yeah. He absolutely does not need to bring the hot journalist who's been flirting with him.
No, I'm just saying, he wasn't randomly just like, hey, want to go see an abandoned car with me? No. So he's told to go look at this car, and he's like, well, maybe I can get some smooches while I do that. So he asks Gail to come with him, and she agrees, and they go on a nice moonlit walk together.
Yes. The horror movie in the... downstairs, where everyone is partying, starts to have the sex scene at the same time Billy and Sydney start to have their sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
Much more tastefully than most horror movie sex scenes I have seen, I just want to say.
Yeah. It leaves everything to the imagination.
Yes, thank you for not showing us teenagers having sex. Thank you so much for not forcing me to watch underage children fuck each other. Thank you.
Yeah.
There's then a phone call.
And Randy picks it up. And whoever's on the other end, we don't know, tells Randy that the principal has been found dead, hanging from a flagpole.
And or the goalpost
in the football field. And he tells the group this, quite mortified, and the entire, like, group of teens are like, well, let's go see the fucking body, all right!
It's a weird reaction.
What was wrong with teenagers in the 90s? What was wrong with them?
I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
Gail and Dewey, who are having their nice moonlight walk, are almost hit by the teenagers driving their cars, who are so excited about driving their cars. Gotta go see a
dead body.
I don't know. And they fall, and he conveniently falls on top of her, and there's some smooching.
And there's some smooches.
And then he's like, I'm on duty.
He's like, I rescind that smooch. I'm on the clock. And so he turns his head, though, and he notices that the car that they were trying to go investigate is right there. And it is not just any car. It's Sydney's dad's car.
Yes. More on that later, though, because now we're cutting to the post-sex getting dressed.
Yes, and it should be worth noting that, like, now the only people in the house are Stuart, Sydney, Billy, and Randy.
Yes. And Sydney is talking to Billy, and she's like, oh, who did you call with your phone call? And he was like, I called my dad. And she was like, oh, the sheriff called your dad. And he was like, well, yeah, because my dad didn't pick up when I answered. And starts getting weirdly intense, and he's like, you don't think I'm the murderer, do you, Sid?
And he, like,
what do I have to do? While he, like, leans creepily in.
He, like, leans in with his murder eyes, and he's like, what do I have to do to convince you that I'm not the murderer? And she's like, not that.
And who should appear in the doorway but Ghostface?
Oh, no!
Who stabs Billy.
Oh, no!
Sort of.
Oh.
Because we only see Billy's back while there's some, like, stabbing noises.
For all intents and purposes, Billy is stabbed.
Yes, but he turns around, blood on his shirt.
He's covered in blood.
I'm just saying, I also called that horror movies love to show us the murders.
Spoilers.
This whole podcast is a spoiler.
So anyway, he falls down dead, wink, wink. And Sydney's like, fuck that, and ensues a chase.
Yes, she makes it to the attic and climbs out onto the roof. And Ghostface tries to push her off the roof, which she does fall. But fortunately happens to fall onto the tarp of a boat, so it's kind of cushioning.
Comfy boat.
Well, no, it's not the boat. But the tarp itself is not solid, right? There's some give there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Randy, meanwhile, is by himself, now clearly very drunk.
Oh, yeah, he's got a beer in his hand, and it's the scene.
And a pillow. He's, like, snuggling a pillow.
And he's watching the scene in Halloween where Jamie Lee Curtis finds the Judith Meyer gravestone, and Michael is behind her, and he's like, look behind you, look behind you. And as he's saying look behind you, Ghostface is approaching him from behind.
Yes.
And we're like, no, Randy, you that.
Moments beforehand, though, the killer gets distracted and runs off.
Gets distracted because while Sydney is walking around outside, she finds Tatum jammed up in the garage door. And that is a horrific sight, so she screams. And that alerts Ghostface to where she is gone.
Yes. She finds Kenny in the van. And he, like, lets her in. She's kind of covered in blood. She's clearly having a bad time by now. And he sees Randy in the house with the killer sneaking up on him. And he forgets there's a 30-second delay.
Yeah, and then they're like, we need to go help him. And Kenny hops out of the bus, and he's like, it's time for me to make my character worth it. It's time for me to be the hero at the end. But then he notices that the door is open, and he's like, oh, shit, there's a 30-second delay. And Ghostface slits his throat, and Kenny dies. And that's Rip Kenny.
That is Rip Kenny. So the killer manages to cut Sydney before she successfully flees again. And meanwhile, Dewey and Gail have arrived. Dewey is investigating the house, and Gail is heading to the van.
Mm-hmm.
In the van, Gail finds the cell phone, but not Kenny. And she also finds Randy, who's randomly in the van, and, like, whaps him in the head a bunch with her cell phone.
Yeah, well, I think she's in the van, and Randy comes to the window and is like, you gotta help! But she thinks it's Ghostface and whaps him in the face of the phone, causing him to fall out backwards.
That makes more sense. I couldn't work out why he was
in the van.
He's
not in the van. No.
But she moves the van forward, and Kenny's body sure was on top of the van and is now on the windshield.
Yeah, and in her panic to try and drive with this corpse on her roof, she ends up driving the van into a ditch where it slams into a tree.
Well, specifically, Sydney is still running in the road, and she sees Sydney at the last second and swerves to avoid her. And crashes into the tree. So Sydney runs back to the house screaming for Dewey, who stumbles out of the house with a knife in his back and then falls over.
He's like, I've been got.
Yes.
And so he dies. And Randy goes...
First, the killer comes out and grabs the knife out of Dewey and chases Sydney to the cop car. And then the killer has, like, ooh, what you gonna do? I have the keys.
Yes.
And he, like, jingles them.
He like, taps her at the window with his knife and then jingles the keys. It's good. And she's jumping around to try and lock it as he's unlocking various places. But eventually she does manage to get on the radio and call for help.
Yes. And then she manages to escape just as the killer gets inside the car and runs over to Dewey's presumably dead body, where she grabs his gun, mm-hmm. at which point Stu and Randy both show up and start accusing each other of the murders.
Yeah, it's like, rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, as they're just like, he's the murderer, no he is. And Sydney's like, well, fuck both of you, and closes the door on both of them. And I'm like, that's fair.
Yes. Billy is at this time apparently still alive.
Yeah, he's at the top of the stairs, looking pretty bedraggled, pretty stabbed, and he falls down them.
Yes, and then he convinces Sydney to give him the gun, and Billy takes it and hears Randy pounding on the door, so he opens the door, lets Randy in, and then he quotes Psycho and shoots Randy.
Yeah, he's like, we all go a little mad sometimes, and then shoots Randy, and Randy is maybe dead? We don't know. Randy's been shot.
There's a lot of maybe dead, maybe not. At this point, Billy is like, corn syrup! What a great blood prop! That's what they used for Carrie.
Yes.
Just saying. If a horror movie doesn't show you someone being murdered brutally, they're probably not actually murdered.
And so we do learn, though, that it's not just Billy that is the horror. No, he has an accomplice. Stuart.
It's true, which I did not call. I did definitely just think it was Billy.
There's a lot of points in the movie where, like, the convenient timing requires two people.
That's valid.
If you think about it.
It's true.
So.
It's true. I just hadn't.
Yeah.
But I was right about Billy.
You were right about Billy.
Who's not dead and very much in murder time. Mm-hmm. And he and Stu basically admit to Sydney that they framed Cotton for her mother's murder, which they committed because her mother was having an affair with Billy's father.
Which caused Billy's mother to leave. And so Billy blames Sydney's mom for his abandonment.
So murder a bunch of people, I guess.
So time to be a murderer.
Yes. Stu reveals at this point that they have Sydney's father hostage. Mm-hmm. And they're going to pin the murders on him.
Yeah.
And because they're going to pin the murders on him, they got to stab each other. For some reason, before they finish murdering everyone.
Before they finish killing Sydney, they gotta stab each other. And so Billy's like, stabs Stuart, and Stuart's like, oh, that was really deep. It hurts. And then he's like, okay, just try and be like shallow, not too far. And Stuart's like, sure thing, pal. And just like stabs him really hard in the side. So now both of our villains are stabbed.
And then Billy stabs Stu a couple extra times, just in case. And then they're arguing over the knife. And Sydney is just watching, unrestrained, while Billy stabs him a couple times.
Just like, what is going on?
Yes. And then they get over there, and Stu is like, okay, I'll grab the gun. But the gun, it's missing.
Yeah, the gun is missing. Dun. And Billy's like, son of a bitch, turns back, and turns out so is Sydney. Oh, shit. And so Billy begins to rampage around the house angrily.
Well, not quite yet, because we find that Gail has the gun.
Right.
And she's pointing at the boys, and she tries to shoot him. But the safety's on, and he kicks her unconscious onto the front step. And it's while they're dealing with Gail that Sydney and her father go missing.
Yes, and so Gail is now unconscious. Sydney has escaped, and suddenly the phone rings, and she uses the voice changer to start harassing Billy in the same way that Billy was harassing people.
Yes, and Billy gives the phone to Stu while he looks for her, and Stu is like, did you really call the cops? And she's like, fuck yeah, I did. And he's like, my parents are gonna be so mad at me.
And it's clear that Stu is like, because he's been stabbed a few times now, he is dying.
He's not doing so great.
Not feeling so great.
Yes, Billy rampages through the house, and he opens a closet, and Sydney is wearing the ghost face costume and stabs him with an umbrella.
Stabs him with the pointy bit of an umbrella. And it looks like that's it for Billy, but turns out Stuart still has a little bit of spunk left in him.
With surprising verb, honestly. Yeah.
And so he is going to tackle her, but she manages to reverse around and shove him off onto the ground. And then she pulls the TV down on him, and it smashes him in his head and electrocutes him to death.
And that's Rip Stu.
And that's Rip Stu.
Although not Rip. We don't want him to rest in peace.
Remember, Rip, rest in pain.
Right. I keep forgetting that.
We've established it.
Randy at this point is also not dead and startles Sydney. But before they can deal with that startle, Billy isn't dead this time either.
Yeah. So she's like, Randy, you're alive. And he's like, yeah, I never thought I'd be so glad to be a virgin in my entire life, because virgins survived the horror movies. Then he gets decked in the face by Billy, who is alive. And he's going to start trying to stab Sydney with his gun, but Sydney manages.
So he's
going to
stab her with his gun?
With his knife. The bayonet. He's got a bayonet on the gun.
Handgun bayonet.
Yeah.
It's a thing now.
Oh, God. He tries to stab her with a knife, and she manages to get her finger, though, in his stab wound, causing him to be in pain just long enough for Gail to show up clutch with the safety off this time.
Yes, and shoot Billy. At which point, the three of them kind of, oh, that was wild. And Sydney takes the gun from Gale, and Randy is like, no, he's probably not dead yet. In the horror movie, there's always one last scare. And so Billy, like, sure enough, opens his eyes, and Sydney's like, well, no, and just caps him in the head.
Caps him in the head and says, not in my movie.
Yes. The police arrive. We see Dewey is, in fact, still alive. He's being taken to the hospital.
Yeah.
Randy and Sydney, also alive. Gale, still a little bloody. She's got, like, literal bits of blood on her face. She's like, okay, cameraman who's shown up, we have a story to tell the public.
Exactly. And she begins to have a breaking report on... She's like, and an exclusive eyewitness account, myself.
I am the eyewitness.
And the movie ends.
Yes.
With that. So that is Scream in all of its meta glory. And it is a fun movie, especially if you're the type of person that has seen all of the slasher movies. Then you're going to find that there's stuff here for you.
Yes. So
now's the part of the podcast that we break it down with the ratings. So, Vicky, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well made was this movie?
I would give it probably an 8. The effects are really good, like the blood effects and stuff. They choose well when to use the, like, murdery effects and when to not. I really appreciate they didn't make me watch teenagers have sex like so many other horror movies do. Looking at you, Carrie, that's just full-on softcore shower porn for the first 5 minutes.
Softcore.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it an 8. I thought it was actually, like, really well made. And it really is a love letter to horror movies. It's clear they were trying their best, you know?
I think I'm going to give it a 7. Just simply because there's no effects that jump out and wow me. And there's no, like, shots that I'm like, that's an iconic shot, and blah, 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 blah. But, like, it's kind of standard for its fare, but that's okay, because you can be bad, and it's not bad. So,
yes,
it's good there. So, 7 for me. So, now on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy it?
I'm going to give this one a 7. I had fun. I snickered. I had a really good laugh at how it was sexist to suggest that women can also be brutal serial killer murder people. There's a lot of good meta conversation. There's a lot of clever lines. It never becomes so obsessed with its cleverness that you are like, okay, we get it, you're clever. So yeah, I had a good romp, except for Tatum's death. That was not a good romp.
Not a good romp.
That was not
a sad romp.
Yeah. It was a romp. I would prefer not to be on that romp.
A nomp. For me, I think I'm actually going to give it a 6. I appreciate this movie for what it does, but I've never once in my life craved it. I've never been like, I could really go for some Scream right now. Like, this is only the third time I've ever watched it in my life, and the other two times were to show it to people last time was to show it to someone as well. The first time was to watch it myself. So, like, yeah, it's not really my fave, but a 6. So now on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary was it?
I'm gonna give it a 5.
Ooh.
I called at the beginning that Billy was the murderer. I called that shit. Mm. At the same time, I was left uncertain who was going to die, and it did a good job of not having jump scares so much as reveals, which I find spookier. And it played its cards well, building tension. Mm. And Tatum's death gets, like, a whole extra point just for that.
Nice. All right. I'm going to give it a 2. Just because, like, I don't know, it's a guy with a knife stabbing people. Doesn't really rustle my jimmies in a bad way, I mean.
It doesn't scare your jimmies?
It doesn't frighten my jimmies, so...
Spook your jimmies?
Spook my jimmies, so it gets a 2 for me. So we hope you guys enjoyed us breaking down Scream for you. Join us next time when we cover The Ritual, which is a movie about some friends that go on a hike and everything goes great.
No, it's not. I haven't seen it, but I know it's not a movie where everything goes great, because then it wouldn't be a horror movie. That's not how those work.
Yeah.
If you want to get in touch with us before then, you can find us on Instagram or Twitter at ScaredyPodcats. Get it? Podcast with cats.
Such glee.
Hysterical every time. You probably heard our cat jingling in the background of this one several times. She jingled a lot. Until then, I'm your co-host, Vicky Sopvet.
And I'm Thomas J. Sopvet. Thank you very much for listening to this, and be cool to each other.